Well, a very good morning to you, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to day two of the Homeless and Inclusion Health Conference 2016. If I can have a bit of hush, if you could just settle down, that'd be great. I've got a few little announcements before we get going. The first is, it's an opportunity not to be missed, ladies and gentlemen. If you are involved in any way in providing primary health care to homeless people and you haven't bumped into Dr. Maureen Crane yet, you need to do that. She is with a thing called the Hearth Study. It's got money, it's got opportunity, it's going to make the world a much better place. She wants to hear about what you're doing on the ground. They've got a map, they've got loads of good stuff. You can find her on the pathway desk outside. She's also given, I know, some questionnaires out to people already. She's really keen to get those back. She wants data, and you've got it. So that's Dr. Maureen Crane. Have a word with her. Yesterday I mentioned the roundtable discussions that are going to be happening at lunchtime today. As you remember, they're not roundtable discussions because it's 2016, they are think pods. So we want you, if you haven't come up with some brilliant discussion topic, but think there's something that we really ought to be nailing, you need to do that very quickly today, maybe when you go out for coffee. There is a list already, some really brilliant things to be discussing in your pods, but there's always room for more, so do sort that out if you can. And the list will be put up at lunchtime, so you can choose which one you want to be involved in. Right, for those of you who were not here yesterday or need to be reminded, it's my job to give you the story so far. So we spent some time thinking about the crisis of rising homelessness, the health inequalities affecting the homeless population, the reason those inequalities exist, and an assessment of what we know works in dealing with them. Our search for answers, you may recall, took us as far as Perth in Australia and as close to home as the car park outside where there was a find and treat mobile unit. So this morning I think what we're going to be doing in a metaphorical way is opening the bonnet of our find and treat mobile unit, if you like. We're interested in the metaphorical spark plugs and pistons. What's really going on and why? And what are the tools that we're going to need to fix it? Our focus is on evidence and data, the nuts and bolts of understanding. We have this morning three I think extraordinary presentations, considering three quite different aspects of the homeless experience. In a moment, we'll be thinking about children. A bit later on, we'll be thinking about the end of life. But first, a man whose work in America has led to a tangible shift in the way that US cities and states monitor and fund homeless services, in particular, chronic and family homelessness. I was chatting to him just before we came in. I think there's a lot of what's going on in the States that will resonate with what you're doing in your everyday work here. So with a presentation entitled Baby Booms, Recessions and Long-Term Homelessness, the Dana and Andrew Stone Professor of Social Policy at the School of Social Policy and Practice at the University of Pennsylvania, ladies and gentlemen, Dennis Culhane. Dennis.
Thank you. Thank you, Mark. Well, it's a pleasure to be here. It's actually a great honor. I don't often get the chance to speak outside of the United States, but I was very appreciative that Nigel reached out to me and that he thought that this topic might resonate here. You know, I'm going to give you a little bit of the background on how I came to being interested and actually quite concerned about the age structure of the adult homeless population in the United States. And it started when I first got involved in the issue. In 1985, I started graduate school at Boston College and delved into the literature. Homelessness was surging at the time in the United States. And so I began to try to understand what are the researchers saying, of course, reading the newspaper. And one certainly had the impression from those sources that homelessness had come back, but they were, really talking about the sort of skid row population. It was older, aging population, the quote-unquote bag ladies, the images in the press were of old men and, sipping soup, et cetera. And I decided that I would do an ethnographic study for my dissertation. So I went into the shelter system in Philadelphia for 7 weeks anonymously and lived through the shelter system and going to the soup kitchens for my meals, etc. And what I saw was actually in stark relief to what I had been reading about, what the newspapers were saying and what the academic research was saying. They were not mostly people with mental health problems. They were not mostly elderly people. They were mostly young, able-bodied men in their 20s and early 30s, which really struck me because I was like, this is not the picture that's being portrayed. And indeed, a significant chunk of them were working. They would leave the shelters early in the morning in their work uniforms and come back in the evening, etc. And but one of the other interesting things I discovered, so I did that for 7 weeks in the summer, in July and August. I went back to Boston to code my interviews, etc. And then when I decided, you know, in December, I'm going to go back and visit all my friends that I made. Of course, it's been 7 weeks in these shelters in close quarters. You got to know some people you might even call friends. And so when I went back there, I was absolutely stunned that I could not find any of the people that I had interviewed or that I had gotten to know. And I expected they would still be there. So one of the other key findings that was sort of unintentional from that project was that there was incredible amount of turnover in the homeless population, that large numbers of people who were in the housed population were coming into the homeless system for periods of time and then were going back into the housed population. And that homelessness was, although chronic homelessness was something we could see, was something visible, most homelessness was actually not visible. It didn't look anything like what had been portrayed, and that lots of people were coming through into the system. That was my first time that I got really focused on this age group that seemed to dominate the homeless population, because at the time I was 24 years old and the typical homeless person at that time was, it turns out, about 28 years old. So now fast forward to 2010. We've now had a 1990, a 2000, and a 2010 census, and we're actually able to look at what the age distribution is of the adult homeless population in the United States, and you get this picture. It's pretty stunning. The green line is 1990. And what we see is that most of the population that was homeless was born between 1955 and 1965. That was true in 1990 when their average age was 30. It was true in 2000 when their average age was 40. And it was true in 2010 when their average age was 50. Today, you can guess, their average age is 56, okay? And they're mainly, they're between the ages of 51 and 61. Their life expectancy is 64. Now, if you want to just sort of understand how distinct this population phenomenon is, the red line is the age distribution of the United States population. And you can see the baby boom is very slight. This is the post-war baby boom, which is 1945 to 55 birth cohort, or 1945 to 65, excuse me. But look at the homeless population. Very distinctive. Okay, and again, the peak group was basically 50 years old in 2010, okay? So there's certainly a number of important implications from a practice perspective and even a policy perspective straight away. We can imagine that these are folks who are gonna be dying. They're reaching their life expectancy. Half of them will pass away in the next 10 years. Actually, it's more like 60%, and the remainder over the next, within 15 years. Okay, so we're going to see an increasing onset of chronic diseases. Many of them already have them, but disability and age-related morbidity, frailty, and our homeless programs are not prepared to deal with this. Our homeless programs are mostly designed even for people who experience chronic homelessness, with dealing with mental health and substance use issues, emergency care, making sure they have shelter beds, making sure there's food. But this is a whole different set of issues which are not really going to be manageable in the context of our emergency system. Okay, and even our permanent housing programs, which have formerly homeless people in them, are experiencing the same thing. They're used to mental health and substance abuse supports being primary, and instead they're dealing with all of these assisted living issues that are aging related. So we're going to see increasing demand on our hospitals, people who can't be discharged as a function of their acuity, and it's going to require quite urgently that we be thinking about alternative housing capacity and services. Here's what we're projecting. I worked with some demographers, but basically just looking at the population 60 and over, we see that the number of people who are homeless who are going to be 60 and over is going to increase rather significantly before it then declines because of mortality. And the health care cost is going to reach $2.5 billion a year just for this population. So unless we want to, and that's just assuming that they're remaining homeless, whereas if we got them into alternative accommodations and into housing, we could probably reduce that cost impact. But I don't want to spend too much time because that's not my focus today. So I guess one could conclude that, first of all, what we've observed is that the homelessness crisis that emerged in the United States in the late 80s was cohort-driven. It was a cohort, not a risk period, and is this and the same cohort that was at risk in the 80s has remained the same population that has been experiencing homelessness for the last 35 years. I think there are parallels to what in the post-war period we called the Skid Row homeless population, because in the 1960s, when most of the research was done on Skid Row, the reason it was being done was because they were all dying. And the population was shrinking, and they were leaving behind all these empty SROs, and they were centrally located in the city, and the government wanted to reuse those properties. But the backstory that was in there and the research is that they were all dying and disappearing and not being replaced. And I guess the question for us is, are we going to be seeing the same thing, dying and disappearing adult homeless problem over the next 15 years? So are we going to see a future with substantially less homelessness as we did in the 1970s? Well, I think the answer is not so fast. Because what we didn't ask was why? Why this group? Why people born between 1955 and 1965? Maybe their mothers were smoking? Or there's something bad in the water? No, okay, of course not. There is a demographer who actually had a theory about this, and he published an important book in 1979. His name is Richard Easterlin. And he essentially argued this baby boom and bust cycle goes back 150 years in the United States. It's not just a phenomenon. Most people think it was a result of the Depression and World War II that led to this big baby bust. And then after the war, we got this big baby boom. Well, it is certainly true that those were both very deep baby bust and very large baby booms. But the phenomenon of there being a cycle of booms and busts and birth is actually goes on for 150 years in the history of the United States. And what he basically hypothesized is that people in baby booms would be disadvantaged economically relative to people in baby busts, okay? Because there were more people. And in particular, people on the second half of the baby boom would be disadvantaged because they would be crowded out of the labor market and crowded out of the housing market by the people in the preceding half of the baby boom. So there were downward pressure on wages, upward pressure on housing prices, so by the time the second group comes of age, and in this case they're coming of age in the late 70s and early 80s, there is not enough job opportunities for them, and the housing prices are quite high. So they're living with their parents longer, and they're essentially not getting a toehold into the workforce. Combined with the fact that we had in the United States a recession in 1979 and a very deep recession from 1981 to 1983. Okay, so we had effectively a large surplus labor supply of people in their 20s. Okay, and of course it was going to disproportionately impact the people least competitive in that labor market, which are the people who went to the worst schools in the poorest neighborhoods. And so, as an example, African American males in the 1980s who were in their 20s had an unemployment rate of 25%. That was a rate of unemployment that had never been seen in the history of the statistics of tracking unemployment in the United States, which really only started in the 1950s. So, in other words, there was now this large group of people who had nothing to do, okay? Idle hands is the devil's workshop, as they say. What happens is people get into the underground economy, and in this particular case in the 1980s, it was the crack cocaine economy, okay? That's where people could make money. And so, of course, this is very dangerous activity because there's the risk of violence and gang violence. There's the risk of incarceration, addiction. All of these things happen and befall these folks, and the next thing you know, we see this big increase in crime that's going on in the United States. We respond by incarcerating more people than any other country on the planet, and we have large numbers of people, particularly African-American men, who are cycling in and out of the jails, in and out of treatment systems, and in and out of the homeless system for the next 40 years, and it costs us billions and billions and billions of dollars. Not to mention the lost productivity, the lost opportunity of these folks in their own lives and to their own communities. Okay, so that's the story of what happened. And homelessness is only the tip of that. It's the visible tip of that for a time being. Well, unfortunately, circumstances appear that they might, and I say might, I'm not saying that they in fact are, but they might be repeating themselves. If you take a look in New York City, where we have the best data, because they've been tracking entries and exits to homelessness since 1988, you can see here, as time goes on, this baby boom population, again, is moving to the right, but it's shrinking because of mortality, and they're getting older. We all shrink when we get older a little bit, right? But you can also see that here on the left-hand side, there is a growing emergence of people who are homeless under the age of 30, okay? And this would be basically the millennial population. So here, homelessness has been increasing in New York City for the last 3 years. There's now a record number of people in shelter in New York City ever since records have been keeping track, okay? We now have 12,000 single adults in emergency shelter in New York City. The previous peak in 1991 was around 9,000. Okay, so 12,000 on any given night. And you can see here, it's been a 44% increase since 2000. And in particular, it's being driven by two populations. As, of course, the biggest population is people who are in their 50s, the very group I've been talking about, the second half of the baby boom generation, who, now that they're in their 50s, they were greatly impacted by the recession. They lost jobs, and they were unable to get back into the labor market. That's one group. There's also many who are coming out of long-term incarceration. They may have been in jail for 20, 25 years for crimes they committed in their 20s. They're now getting out in their 50s. They're coming into the homeless system. And of course, we have the people who've always been cycling in and out of the jails and treatment systems, people who haven't committed serious crimes but who've been around the homeless system for a long time. That population is going up dramatically, as you can see, and that is in the green line. But also the other group are people under the age of 25. You can see we have a big surge in the number of people who are under the age of 25 who are coming into the system. They would be the millennial generation, the children of the baby boom generation. And again, it's disproportionately happening to the second half of the millennial generation, the people 18 to 25. Here, just looking at the people 25 and under, you can see we have an 86% increase among the males, 88% increase among the females over this span of time. Indeed, if we look at the people coming into the shelter system, again, these are different time periods, but basically what you can see is 2010, we had a big spike between 18 and 21, but as the red peak is showing, the largest group of new arrivals into the shelter system are between the ages of 18 and 25. That's where we're seeing the biggest growth in homelessness in the United States, is in this under 25 population. Indeed, here is a very good, this is all adults who experience homelessness in New York City. Okay, the green are the heads of the family households. That has always been the case, that they're mostly, the peak group is between 18 to 25, and then it goes down from there. The mothers with their, mostly young mothers with very young children. The red are the two-person households, two adults with no children. It's a group, a category that gets a different kind of shelter in New York City, but look at them. Dominated 18 to 25, and then again on the over 50 population. But it's the blue that are the single solo adults who are coming into the system. And again, so we have what, ultimately, when you look at it, we have a we call this a bimodal distribution. And it's driven, it's basically associated, it would seem to be associated, with these peaks in the birth and probably the excess labor supply associated, because we had, again, the same circumstances, lots of young adults, the global economic crisis that made it impossible for many of them to get into the labor market. And if you don't get into the labor market in your 20s, the odds that you're going to ever have a real stable job for the rest of your life are actually quite glim. And now in this case, we don't have the crack cocaine problem, but we have an opiate addiction problem that is killing many of these young people. And many of the people who are coming into homelessness are addicted to opiates, and we're seeing that in this population. So I know I went through a lot here very quickly, but I guess the question is, Is this a youth homelessness problem? And certainly the provider community around our country is saying, we're seeing a big youth homelessness problem. And everyone's focused on the fact that there's this growth in youth homelessness. My challenge to people would say, now, before we jump to the conclusion that it's youth homelessness, it may be millennial homelessness, meaning they're youth this year, okay, but 10 years from now, they're going to be in their 30s, in their late 20s and 30s. They're not going to be youth anymore. So should we be building systems that are designed around people 18 to 25? Well, for the people who are homeless today, we have to respond developmentally appropriately, but I don't think we should be thinking over the long term that it's going to be 18 to 25-year-olds. It's quite likely that they're going to be aging. So I would just say, well, I want to caution, in our case in the U.S., and I'm not saying this is happening, we actually don't know for sure. We won't know for a few years whether the age distribution actually continues to move to the right. So I'm speculating that we think it's a birth cohort phenomenon, but I would certainly say we don't want to repeat our mistakes of the 80s and 90s where we didn't effectively respond to this surge in homelessness. All we did was build emergency shelter beds and more emergency food programs, and we didn't actually address the fundamental underlying problem, which is these folks need to get connected to the labor market. We need to make sure we try proactively to get them back engaged with their families, that we're providing appropriate behavioral health supports. Of course, another reason why these baby booms cause such problems is because you have large numbers of people coming into their 20s, which is the time when there's the onset of major mental illness, in addition to drug addiction, the beginning of criminal careers, all these things happen in your 20s. So the safety net itself is bulging beyond capacity as a result of this large group of people in their 20s, okay? And the homeless system just reflects that. And of course, obviously, housing supports. But are we going to, providing some kind of housing subsidies to folks, we're looking in the United States about possibly contingent housing supports where people who have a opiate addiction are both in treatment, getting a subsidy, but have to be in some kind of vocational or educational program. And then, of course, over the long term, one has to say that as a society, we should be more anticipatory with regard to what our population needs are going to be based on things like the size of the birth cohort. We should have been thinking about this 10 years ago. We should have been thoughtfully planning for the fact that there was going to be an increasing demand of people in their 20s on all of these social welfare systems and plan appropriately for them, and which of course we did not do. You're thinking about, you know, subsidized employment programs and expanding capacity for labor market opportunities for these folks. So that's my message in brief. I hope I did that in 20 minutes. Thank you.
Beautifully done. Thank you.